I'm Julie Burstein. I'm here for Leonard Lope today. The trumpeter and composer Terence Blanchard is a very busy man. This week he's performing at Birdland with his quartet. He wrote the music for the recent Broadway play The Mother with the Hat, with a word in it that I can't say on the radio. He's in the midst of composing the score for the Broadway revival of A Streetcar Named Desire, and he's writing an opera for Opera Theatre of St. Louis. Terence Blanchard has scored many of Spike Lee's movies and has also just released, actually a couple of years ago, a CD with his quintet called Choices. We just listened to a cut from that album, and I'm delighted to welcome Terence Blanchard to the show today. Hello.
Hello. How are you?
I'm well, and I love, every time I listen to your music, though, now, I always go back to when the levees broke.
Oh, wow.
That just hearing your trumpet brings back those images to me. And I don't know, as a musician, that may not be a happy thought for you, is that when people hear your music, they have such a powerful recollection. But your music was such a powerful part of that.
I appreciate you saying that. The thing about that particular CD for me was that it was something, you know, I don't really take full responsibility for, you know, because it was something that was needed at the time. There were so many people who were hurting in New Orleans. There were so many people who felt like they needed their stories to be told. And we just tried to, in a small way, in our little small area of the world, just give some kind of reflection about what had happened in the aftermath of that event, because we were all caught totally off guard by that. You know, we'd all left for the city for just for what we thought would be a couple of days. And then the next thing you know, when you're watching the news and you learn that you can't go home from the news, it's a very distraught kind of situation to be in.
And the CD that came out of that experience, mm-hmm. This is a Tale of God's Will, there's a lot of, I think you end with a tune to your mom.
Yeah.
And there is an extraordinary sequence in the film, mm-hmm. of you going back to your home, your childhood home with her.
That was a very, very tough thing to do. The only thing that was harder than that was taking my mom to view my father's body when he passed away. But, you know, we were in L.A. because I had an apartment out there. And as a matter of fact, usually when I spot the films with Spike, he usually flies me to New York. But he said, listen, man, stay out there and I'm going to come to you. And when he came to my apartment, he said, listen, I'm going to do a documentary on those levees and I'm going to give those people a chance to speak. So I hadn't found my mother after the hurricane for about 2 weeks. Didn't know where she was. I kept calling her cell phone. And she wouldn't answer. She finally answered, and I got her out to L.A., and we put her in an apartment, which was right across the yard from ours, so my kids can go run by and see Grandma and hang out and everything. So it was cool. And the other thing that we realized was that she never seen me score a film. So she got a chance to come to the studio while we were recording the music out there. And while I was in with the orchestra, Spike was talking to her about the house and everything. And she told Spike, she said, well, I haven't gone in it yet. And then Spike said, well, do you mind if we tape you? And she said, yeah. And I remember I had come back in the control room for a playback. And Spike said, we're going to film your mom going in her home when she goes home. And I went, oh, okay. And I remember that night when we got back to the apartment, I told my mom, I said, do you realize what this entails? I said, you know, that's going to be a tough moment. And I said, you know, there's going to be a bunch of people hanging around. I don't know if you really want to experience that. And my mom says, you know, well, people need to see what we're going through. And that's when, you know, my respect for my mom went sky high, you know. And as a result, you know, a lot of people responded to that scene. And wherever I go still to this day, people ask about my mom. You know, they ask how she's doing. She's doing fine. She's back in her home.
I was going to ask also, yes. Is how is she? And, you know, yes. You are someone who grew up in New Orleans. Mm-hmm. Do you live there still?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So how is it now?
The city has come a long way, you know, but it's like anything else. Downtown and the areas that make money are definitely up and running and going at full strength. It's some of the smaller suburban areas that are still struggling, You know, my mom's neighborhood, for example. My mom's neighborhood is, you know, it's doing rather well, but there's still a number of people who haven't rebuilt their homes for whatever reasons. You know, there are a number of reasons why people haven't been able to do it. Some people were ripped off by contractors. Some people have found better lives other places, and so forth and so on. So it's a mixed bag of tricks. The thing that's interesting about it is that we have a new mayor now, in Mitch Landrieu, and he's doing a lot of things to try to bring jobs to the city. And we have a new influx of a young, what we've been calling a brain gain, of young people who are coming in with fresh ideas about what to do.
I'm speaking with Terrence Blanchard, and he and his quintet are playing at Birdland this week. Mm-hmm. You know, you mentioned Spike Lee saying he wanted people to be able to tell their stories. Mm-hmm. When I listen to your music, I feel like you're telling stories, too. You may not be using words, mm-hmm. but there are such stories there. Mm-hmm. Is that something that you aspire to, or that when you're writing you think about?
Oh, definitely. I mean, and it comes from a number of things. It comes from, you know, from what I experienced listening to the greats like John Coltrane and Miles Davis and what they could convey through their music. And it also comes through my experience as a film composer, you know, working with people to help them tell stories all the time makes me realize that, you know, music has to take that same kind of journey, has to be on that same kind of path. You know, Art Blakey always used to say, he said all the time, I mean, it became his mantra, music washes away the dust of everyday life, you know. And that stuck with me. So, you know, when people...
And you performed with him for a number of years.
I played with him for 4 years.
Yeah.
So for me, is when people hear music, you know, they should be swept away. They should, the purpose of it is to take you out of the mood that you're in and take you on a journey that you haven't expected to be on.
Now, these days, you are composing all sorts of kinds of music. You're working mm-hmm. with your quintet. You're writing film music. Mm-hmm. You've just worked on Broadway. Mm-hmm. What are the similarities and what are the differences in these different ways of expressing yourself musically?
Well, the similarities are the things that they're mostly technical, you know, in terms of how do you orchestrate, how do you get a certain sound out of a small group, large group, you know, what are the choices that you make in terms of color. Those things are similar. The things that are different are the intent, you know, because for plays, with the play that I had just done, the music is more of a transitional thing to help move the energy from one scene to the next and take the energy from that from the first scene and move you right into the next scene seamlessly.
So that the role is a way of, it's almost... through time, you're moving people
exactly.
from here to there.
Exactly, exactly. And not letting any of the energy drop throughout the performance. In film, it's a little different because film, there are moments when the music has to be the backdrop and it has to deal with all of the intangibles and telling a story and show you sometimes not necessarily what an actor is feeling, but what other people may be responding to, you know. And then, of course, you know, when you're writing for your own group, it's really about what we want to say artistically and how we want to say it.
The thing that seems to be a through line through all of that is the emotion behind things, that in the play, you're kind of creating an emotional bridge from right. one scene to another, mm-hmm. and that in the movie, the music helps underscore or yes. emphasize a particular kind of the emotion.
Well, that's the thing about music that I've loved all my life. One of the things that I love about music is that, you know, music is that other language that's very universal. It's the thing that can create vibrations which will translate into different types of energy or emotions. And all of us, we can all relate to it in some form or fashion. It's one of the reasons why Louis Armstrong, you know, became one of the most famous musicians of all time, because his music transcended all barriers, you know, language, you know, class. It touched a lot of different people. And the same thing is occurring today.
And I think you're right. It makes me think of, I had a conversation yesterday with a friend who's a neuroscientist who was talking about our sense of smell, that mm-hmm. it goes directly into our hippocampus. So
right.
it goes past,
right.
there's no intermediary. And I think
right.
music goes directly into whatever emotional part of us there
exactly.
is. It goes past language
right.
to something that is below all
right.
of that.
Right. You know, it's funny. I was having this conversation with George Lucas. We just finished working on a project together. We were talking about that very thing. We were talking about how that's one of the things that you cannot deny. You can't deny the responses. You know, that's the reason why we have such a thing as fame. Mm-hmm. You know, or popularity, if you will. I mean, we tend to think, oh, well, you know, this guy is great because he can do this. But really what it is that he's touching those neurons that make all of us respond to a certain thing, and it's doing it in a mass, in a way that's touching a large amount of people. So then we call it the most popular thing. But it goes directly to what you're talking about.
And I think it's also why music can sometimes be seen as dangerous, because there is a way around the authority of think this way.
Right.
Suddenly you're feeling something.
Well, that's the thing. That's the reason why the music was dangerous at a certain point of our history. You know, that's the reason why they had cabaret licenses. That's the reason why music was, you know, you tried to keep music away from the slaves so they couldn't, you know, communicate, you know, and couldn't find the strength to deal with what they felt was an injustice, you know. And it's still occurring to this day. It's still occurring to this day. I remember when I started playing with our Blakey, there was a trumpet player who had just left the band. His name was Valery Ponomarev, and he was from Russia. And he tells a story about how he had to sneak and go and listen to jazz records in Russia because he loved the music, but it was something that was not allowed for them to listen to.
I'm speaking with Terrence Blanchard, who is a composer and a trumpet player and leads the Terrence Blanchard Quintet, which is at Birdland this week. And you can find information about that at our show page at the Leonard Lopate Show at WNYC.org. I'm Julie Burstein in for Leonard Lopate today. Terrence, you worked with Spike Lee and have worked with him for many, many years. And mm-hmm. you were just mentioning you were working with George Lucas. Mm-hmm. What do you love about collaboration with filmmakers?
Oh, the thing about working with people in other forms of art is that there are challenges there that make you grow. You know, when you stay in your confined area, you can create a certain world of comfort, mm-hmm. which would not allow you to experience new things. And, you know, when I'm working with Spike is always challenging me. For example, you know, with Inside Man, I always tell a story because Spike, when we work together, you know, he'll ask me to give him a bunch of themes. So, you know, he can go through them and say, well, I want to assign this theme here, this theme there. And sometimes I try to steer him along. So with Inside Man, there was a theme that I wanted as the love theme between Denzel and the woman who played his wife. So I gave it to Spike in a very sweet kind of scenario with just flute and piano. It was very obvious that this was supposed
this was
to
love.
Be. Yeah, yeah, exactly. And Spike goes, that's the main theme. And I went, what? So, you know, now I have to backtrack and I have to figure out a way to, how do I take this theme and make this thing, you know, ominous? How do I make it huge? How do I make it, give it a sense of danger? And those are the things that make me grow. Those are the things that make me find new ways of writing and arranging, you know, as an artist. And I love that. Always the same thing happened on Miracle at St. Anna, the exact same thing.
And it sounds like, you know, a lot of people challenge and the kind of friction that happens when there's disagreement is something mm-hmm. that feels so uncomfortable they try not to deal with.
Yeah.
But as an artist, it sounds like that's what you need in order to be able to move forward.
Well, you need it, but I think the thing you need most is the recognition of it first.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think when you start to have that feeling, you have to, you know, not have the knee-jerk reaction of trying to protect yourself.
That feeling of, oh, wait, this wasn't what I meant at all.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, for me, what I try to do is I try to take a breath, you know.
Uh-huh.
And my thing is there's something that this person is seeing that I'm missing if this is what they want. So I have to sit down and say, okay, well, let me try to give them exactly what it is that they need. And it's inevitably, whenever that happens to me, the thing that I realize is that I'm trying to protect a certain thing that I like because I'm not too comfortable in this other situation. But then if I do some homework and I do some investigation and I become a little more comfortable and I become a little more well-versed in that, then it becomes easier and therefore I grow a little further.
With that theme for Inside Man, how mm-hmm. long did it take you before you could take this thing that you thought, this is love, this is that connection between these two people to the ominous, well, and love can be ominous too,
right.
But to the ominous
right,
layers underneath?
Well, it took about a day, you know, of just sitting down and not listening to it. That was the thing. Yeah, not listening to it. I mean, because if I listened to it, I was going to constantly hear what my original intention for it. So for me, what I had to get back to is like, okay, but what do I feel about this character? What do I feel about this, the overall story, and what does it need? It needs a sense of pace. So I started feeling rhythm. Then it needed a sense of color. So I started adding bigger things and brass and all of those things to it. And then all of a sudden I said, oh, okay, well, the melody definitely can't be flute. It needs to go here. It needs to go to these other instruments for certain situations. And when you whittle away at it like that, it'll start to, I always say this to my students, it will unfold itself to you. It's not going to come, sometimes it does, but most of the time for me, it doesn't come in like one wave of inspiration. It's like a whittling away at it. And the more you chip away at it, the more it starts to reveal itself.
And that it's by those small combinations which suddenly reveal the larger scope of what you're trying to do.
Yes, and then once you see it, then you can go back and do further manipulation of your orchestration.
In your album Choices, you work with a collaborator with Cornel West, and mm-hmm. you take some of his words, and sometimes his talk is separate, and sometimes it's really woven in mm-hmm. to the piece. In fact, I wanted to listen to a little bit of a piece, the title, Choices. Let's hear that.
And there's something about the humanity of a person, because how do we prepare for death? That's what it is to give it mando. What does it mean to be a featherless, two-legged, linguistically conscious creature born between urine and feces, whose body will be the culinary delight of terrestrial worms one day? That's the death sentence in space and time for each and every one of us. And it comes down to what? Choice. What kind of human being you're gonna be? How you go out for a life of decency and compassion and service and love? What goes into that kind of choice? You see what I mean? That's the human challenge. That's the human challenge.
That's from the album Choices by Terrence Blanchard and his quintet, and that is Cornel West. Mm-hmm. When I listened to this album and heard those pieces, he sounds like another instrument in your group. How did you put those things together? Did you talk to him first and then pull out from the conversation what you wanted?
Yeah, well, I told him the concept that we had, you know, because it's kind of a sequel to the Tale of God's Will CD, And in Tale of God's Will, we basically dealt with the aftermath of Katrina. And what I wanted to do with Choices.
And the only words in that is, this is a tale of God's will.
Right.
The rest is just instrumental.
Right.
Yeah.
And with Choices, my whole idea was, you know, we as a community, you know, we like to point the finger at our leaders. But the thing we have to realize, they're there because of the choices we made, whether we voted or not, whether we voted for a certain person or not, or voted for somebody else. And we have to start to take responsibility for those choices. So I didn't want to do it through song. You know, I wanted to create a debate about the topic. So Dr. West was the first person that I thought of when I thought about doing it. And when he agreed to be a part of the project, we went up to his office, and we actually have it on videotape as well, where I just sat down with him. We talked for about an hour about all of these different topics. And what I did was I put all of the conversation in my computer, and then I labeled it at certain spots with things that he had said. And the interesting thing about it was, you know, those introductions on certain tunes, we just came up with those in the rehearsal. We didn't say, we're going to do this to put Dr. West's voice here. That happened throughout the CD, through all of the pieces. It was the most incredible thing, how it all just kind of came together. That's why he's alone in some spots. He's at the end of certain things. He's at the beginning of certain things. Because when I started to look at, okay, well, this will go with this particular tune, this is the right sentiment for this, it just all came together, you know. And there are a lot of other great things that he said that we didn't get a chance to use, though.
So it sounds like you and your group together listened to this and then worked, that you didn't say, play these notes. You did this as a kind of, and you've worked with these musicians before.
Yes.
So
mm-hmm.
how does that happen? Do you lead them and say, here's what I'm thinking, or do you give them the material and say, let's see what we come up with?
Well, it's a little combination of both. I mean, you know, that with A Tale of God's World, they kind of knew the direction that we were going in. They knew what the story was about. So everybody had their own take on what it was that they wanted to say about the situation. And the thing about A Tale of God's World was we had no title for the CD. We're in the studio, and we're basically making this recording. And as we were doing one of these things that we call the ghost.
The piece called the ghost.
Right. Mm-hmm. There's three separate transitions that we used. They came about just as a jam. And what happened was the bass player and the saxophone player were in there messing around. And said, hey, man, that sounds like something cool. Let's record that. And then we kept saying, well, we're going to use those as transitions. And when we did the one with the drum and bass, while they were doing it, the chant just kept ringing in my ear. And we laid that down as the vocal thing. And then the guy said, man, you should play on it, you know, and you should be the ghost, you know, of all of the... all of our ancestors who were trying to tell us, you know, this is what's coming. So I put the trumpet on it, and that's kind of what happened with that. And then with Choices, a similar thing. The thing that's great about the guys that I have is that we, while they are very accomplished musicians, they work very hard, and they work hard at their arrangements. They work hard at dealing with their instruments and what it is they want to say. But we also strongly believe in faith, you know, so... we'll get into a situation and we'll allow the music, like I was telling you earlier, to tell us what it is that it should be and how it should unfold.
How is it now for you? You're going to be writing an opera. You're probably working on it now. Mm-hmm. Is that a very different way of approaching music? Because you're by yourself with a story that you have to tell musically.
Oh, it's one of the toughest things I've ever had to do. It's you know, the interesting thing about it, I took the project because my father loved opera. And my father listened to opera a lot growing up, and he wanted to be he was a baritone. He had a beautiful voice, but he never sang professionally. And this is just something that's always been in the back of my mind.
I'm just picturing you at home in New Orleans on like a Sunday afternoon listening to the opera with your dad.
No, well, you know, there were times I would listen to the operas with him, but...
there were times you would run away.
Man, you know, the funny thing about it, when my dad would go, he would come home from work and he would sit in the front. We lived in a small house, and you saw the house in the documentary. So, you know, he would sit in the front, man, and put on his records, and you would just hear doors slamming in the back of the house. People were trying to find their own peace and quiet, and he'd be in the front listening to Carmen and just singing away.
And so now you're writing an opera.
Yeah, so I'm very excited about it, and it's a very different process. The thing that makes it really difficult is that, you know, it's like a film in that it's telling a story, but it's unlike a film because it's all done with music, and then the music has to constantly keep the story moving and keep it interesting. You know what I mean? Without having any pauses. And that's a difficult thing for me. It's a new challenge.
So it's like what you've done for the play, but you also have to do the play
the part. Other part.
You have to do
yes.
the whole thing,
exactly.
too. Well, I can't wait to hear what you put together with that.
Thank you.
Well, if you want to listen to Terrence Blanchard and his quintet, you can do so at Birdland, and information is on the Leonard Lopate show page. I've been speaking with Grammy Award-winning jazz trumpeter and composer Terrence Blanchard. He's performing with his quintet at Birdland through Saturday at 8:30 and 11 each night. For more information, visit leonardlopate at wnyc.org. Terrence, thank you so much for joining us
Thanks
today.
Thanks for having me. This has been fun.
For me too.